we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
You know, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Western Canada's only radio program and podcast on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is CFRO Co-op Radio 100.5 FM in Vancouver, Canada, December 7th, 2018. I'm your host, Jen Dobell, and I'm joined in studio by Allison Cole, my co-host.
Hi there.
And today's show features an interview with Toronto activist Jenny McQueen, who was recently charged with break and enter, as well as mischief, for entering a pig production facility to document the extreme animal cruelty and to rescue piglets in distress. Stay tuned for that interview in about 15 minutes' time. Today is International Human Rights Day, and as an animal rights activist, I'm often asked what I'm doing for human suffering. This is stated in a tone of criticism and deflection and defensiveness. And what animal rights activists are constantly having to explain to people when we do outreach is the connection between animal rights, environmentalism, human rights, and human health epidemics. And so today, Allison and I are just going to speak about that a little bit and just try to bring it together for everybody. And we're going to be mentioning a lot of facts that were from the very famous documentary Cowspiracy, which I highly recommend you check out. That's on Netflix. If you don't have Netflix, ask a friend for their password and check out Cowspiracy. So, Allison, do you find yourself in discussions with people about veganism that quickly turns to human rights issues as a defensive kind of response?
Well, I think a common response is always that I get from people in general is, why do you care so much about animal rights but not human rights?
Mm-hmm.
And I've thought about this. I actually posted an article about this that I wrote some years ago on my blog for World Human Rights Day. I can post that on our Facebook page. And what I say is, well, we are animals, right? And humans are animals, and everything is symbiotic, and we all rely on each other. We all have relationships where all species rely on each other to live on this earth. And it's not a matter of just saying that we only care about non-human animals. We care about everyone because we care about our health, we care about the environment. And I know that you're going to be speaking about some of that today and how it ties into, I mean, going vegan is about human rights as well in many ways. And we've actually done a lot of shows in the past on World Human Rights Day around this time of the year,
mm-hmm.
where we have done many interviews showing the intersections between human rights and animal rights. And one of them I know that you did recently was about showing the rights of slaughterhouse workers.
Mm-hmm.
And that is very impacted mm-hmm. within the animal agriculture industry, is how do, like, what are the rights like for the people who are involved in that?
A lot of PTSD, there's increased crime and violence
in
communities.
A lot of injuries.
And increased crime and violence in communities when slaughterhouses are put in. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we have a clip right now we're just going to play, which is David Attenborough speaking to the UN about making this connection to extinction and how it's going to affect humans.
Right now, we're facing a man-made disaster of global scale, our greatest threat in thousands of years, climate change. If we don't take action, the collapse of our civilizations and the extinction of much of the natural world is on the horizon. The United Nations provides a unique platform that can unite the whole world. And as the Paris Agreement proved, together we can make real change happen. The world's people have spoken. Their message is clear. Time is running out. They want you, the decision makers, to act now. They're behind you, along with civil society represented here today, supporting you in making tough decisions, but also willing to make sacrifices in their daily lives. To help make change happen, the United Nations is launching the Act Now bot. helping people to discover simple everyday actions that they can make, because they recognize that they too must play their part. The people have spoken. Leaders of the world, you must lead the continuation of our civilizations and the natural world upon which we depend is in your hands. Thank you.
So I just want to read out some facts that are posted on the CowspiracyFacts.com webpage. And these are often disputed, and people who are critics of documentaries like this are constantly trying to say that it's not based on factual evidence, but you can actually look it up yourself and all of the sources are provided. So I just chose a few that I think would veganize anybody if they knew these things. Animal agriculture is responsible for 18% of greenhouse gas emissions, more than the combined exhaust from all transportation. Livestock and their byproducts account for at least 32,000 million tons of carbon dioxide per year, or 51% of all worldwide greenhouse gas emissions. Methane is 25 to 100 times more destructive than CO2 on a 20-year time frame, and has a global warming potential 86 times that of CO2 on a 20-year time frame. Livestock is responsible for 65% of all human-related emissions of nitrous oxide, a greenhouse gas with 296 times the global warming potential of carbon dioxide, and which stays in the atmosphere for 150 years. Emissions for agriculture projected to increase by 80% by 2050. Agriculture is responsible for 80 to 90% of U.S. water consumption. I apologize that these facts are U.S.-based, but this is a U.S. Documentary. 2,500 gallons of water are needed to produce 1 pound of beef. 477 gallons of water are required to produce 1 pound of eggs. Almost 900 gallons of water are needed for 1 pound of cheese. 1,000 gallons of water are required to produce 1 gallon of milk. Livestock or livestock feed occupies 1/3 of the Earth's ice-free land. Livestock covers 40% of the Earth's total land. Animal agriculture contributes to species extinction in many ways, in addition to the monumental habitat destruction caused by clearing forests and converting land to grow feed crop. For animal grazing, predators and competition species are frequently targeted and hunted because of a perceived threat to livestock profits. The widespread use of pesticides, herbicides, and chemical fertilizers used in the production of feed crops often interferes with the reproductive systems of animals and poisons waterways. The overexploitation of wild species through commercial fishing, bushmeat trade, as well as animal agriculture's impact on climate change all contribute to global depletion of species and resources. Livestock operations on land have created more than 500 nitrogen-flooded dead zones around the world in our oceans. Animal agriculture is the leading cause of species extinction, ocean dead zones, water pollution, and habitat destruction. We could see fishless oceans by 2048. For every 1 pound of fish caught, up to 5 pounds of unintended marine species are caught and discarded as bykill. As many as 40%, 63 billion pounds of fish caught globally every year are discarded. 1,100 land activists have been killed in Brazil in the last 20 years. There's a human rights issue right there. We're currently growing enough food to feed 10 billion people. There are less than that on this earth. 82% of starving children live in countries where food is fed to animals, and the animals are eaten by Western countries. A person who follows a vegan diet produces the equivalent of 50% less carbon dioxide, uses 1/11th oil, 1/13th water, and 1/18th land compared to a meat lover for their food. Each day, a person who eats a vegan diet saves 1,100 gallons of water, 45 pounds of grain, 30 square feet of forested land, 20 pounds CO2 equivalent, and one animal's life. Allison, there's something that we haven't talked about yet, which is the impact on humans who get infections where they need antibiotics. And we know that we are in an age now where antibiotics are becoming ineffective. And I just wanted you to play a clip from Dr. Michael Greger, a very famous vegan medical doctor who is an advocate for veganism for many reasons. This is one of his topics that he's quite passionate about.
As a rule, high-ranking public health officials try to avoid apocalyptic descriptors So it's worrying to hear those like the director of the CDC warn of a coming health nightmare and a catastrophic threat. A number of prominent publications recently warn of the threat of antibiotic resistance. The CDC estimates that at a minimum, more than 2 million people are sickened every year with antibiotic-resistant infections in the United States, with at least 23,000 dying as a result. We may be at the dawn of a post-antibiotic era. Achievements in modern medicine, such as surgery and treatment of preterm babies, which we today take for granted, would not be possible without access to effective treatment for bacterial infections. For example, without antibiotics, the rate of postoperative infection after a procedure like a hip replacement would be 40 to 50%, and about 1 in 3 of those patients would die. That's like Russian roulette odds. So the so-called worst-case scenarios, where resistant infections could cost like $50 billion a year, might still be an underestimate. From cradle to grave, antibiotics have become pivotal in safeguarding the overall health of human society. So the dire phrasing from head officials may be warranted. There are now infections like carbapenem-resistant Enterobacter, resistant to nearly all antibiotics, even the so-called drugs of last resort. Worryingly, some of these last resort drugs are being used extensively in animal agriculture. According to the World Health Organization, more antibiotics are fed to farm animals than is used to treat disease in human patients. Doctors overprescribe antibiotics, but huge amounts of antibiotics are used in fish farming and other intensive animal agriculture, up to 4 times the amount used in human medicine. Why? Suboptimum growth to slaughter weight caused by unsanitary conditions can be compensated with by addition of antibiotics to feed. Instead of relieving any stressful, overcrowded, unhygienic conditions, it may be cheaper to just, you know, dose the animals with drugs. In this way, factory farms are driving the growth of antibiotic-resistant organisms that cause human diseases. This may help bolster the industry's bottom line, but in the process, bacteria are developing antimicrobial resistance, which affects human health. In the United States, the FDA reports that 80% of antibiotics in the United States are used in food animals, mainly to promote growth in this kind of high-density production. This can select for antibiotic-resistant bacteria like methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, MRSA, or MRSA, considered a serious threat in the United States. These industrial pig operations may provide optimal conditions for the introduction and transmission of MRSA. U.S. pork producers are currently permitted to use 29 different antibiotic drugs in feed without a prescription. They're currently added to about 90% of pig starter feeds. When animals receive unnecessary antibiotics, bacteria can become resistant to the drugs, then travel on meat to the store and end up causing hard-to-treat illnesses in people. MRSA, present in retail raw meat, may serve as a possible source of bacterial infections for food preparers in the food industry and the hands of consumers in the home, unless we wear gloves. Once MRSA gets into our homes on meat, it can transfer to our cutting boards, knives, and onto our skin at a rate similar to the rate of transmission from touching an infected patient contaminated with MRSA. Washing of hands after touching raw pork is advised.
Wow, pretty scary, right?
Yeah, it is really scary because I know someone personally who I was very close to who had MRSA, and his antibiotics never worked for him because he was immune to so many.
Yeah.
And he had to get them done with a central line through his neck and stay in the hospital and whenever he got an infection. So,
and I've had multiple friends and family near death because antibiotics were not working for them. It is really scary. And so next time anyone out there thinks of telling an animal rights activist to mind their own business, this is absolutely our own business.
It affects us all. And as my license plate says, animal rights are human rights. Human rights are animal rights. We're all connected, right?
It's a long license plate. I think you might mean a bumper sticker.
Well, it's
quite the personalized.
It's on my license plate.
Oh, around the license plate. I see. Cool. Very cool.
Did you know that Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, has over 90 different shows produced by over 350 community members? This wide range of programming produced by our diverse group of programmers ensures that we have a show you'll love. We have shows on feminism, spirituality, disability rights, politics, unions, and parenting. We play jazz, indie rock, reggae, blues, and folk. We broadcast in a dozen different languages and have more First Nations programs than any other radio station in Vancouver. Find your show on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. All different, all the time.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM, CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio, broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
Jenny McQueen, a 55-year-old animal rights activist and vegan from Ontario, has recently been charged with break and enter as well as mischief for entering a pig breeding facility which supplies pork to grocery store chain IGA. I have Jenny here to speak with us today about what she exposed that day. Hi, Jenny. Welcome.
Hi, Jen. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
It's a pleasure. So can you tell us, first of all, a little bit about yourself and your vegan journey?
Sure. I became vegan way back in the early 90s now. There was no internet at the time. There was a subscription to a vegetarian magazine, and it had a tiny little advert in the back that kept on niggling at me, you know, veganism, your next step, with a question mark. So eventually I found myself reading articles and reading up on the dairy industry, the egg industry, and how animals were treated. So it was a natural transgression for me to kind of swap along to the kinder way and to become vegan. And as I was doing that, I became involved with my local animal rights organization, and I became involved. I became an activist.
That's awesome. And that's, you know, it's kind of my story as well, is once I've opened my eyes to what happens to animals, ceasing to fund those industries wasn't enough. I felt that I had to speak out as well. And I'm so glad to know you. Our listeners don't know this, but you and I are Facebook friends. We haven't met in real life yet. But I'm really inspired by your videos. It looks to me like you're out there every day doing activism.
Well, I think it's more that I actually record what I'm doing, and I do then post it. It's not absolutely every day. And people shouldn't feel overwhelmed by what they can do, what they can't do. We all do whatever it is, you know, that we can, like our comfort level. So it might be that, you know, I support quite a few different organizations and I believe in a lot of different campaigns. So I do tend to be quite active when I leave the house, yes.
I especially love your videos of you approaching people wearing Canada Goose jackets. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Right. I wanted to come up with a solution where I can approach people and have something to actually give them as a solution. So I came up with Zip Off the Cruelty, which is all about helping people understand that what they're wearing is absolute violence towards animals, and they're promoting animal abuse there. They're normalizing that culture where people think it's okay to wear fur. So I will go to them and say, hey, you know, you can zip off that cruelty. Did you know you're wearing fur? And it's not just Canada Goose. I now have a leaflet which covers all the different brands, whether it's Moose Knuckles, who are using Fox, or Nobis, or, you know, any of the other coat manufacturers that think it's okay to trade in animal violence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. It isn't just Canada Goose. I tend to villainize them a little bit more just because they are so prevalent right now. But you're right. There are many brands out there. And fur sadly does seem to be making a comeback.
Well, it does. And this is the thing that a lot of young people would never wear a full fur coat because they realize that a lot of them do anyway, a lot of them realize that fur is, an absolute awful thing to do, that it's got this tradition now, whereas it's crept in, like, very deceitfully through fur trim, and I think maybe Canada Goose was the first company to use it that way, and the way that they have on their website, you know, oh, it's ethical and it's sustainable, it's just deceiving people. It's like a big corporation now trying to play on people's emotions, saying that they support indigenous populations, and they, you know, they have a sustainable business model, when it's just built on violence and making the most money that they can for their shareholders.
Yeah, for a very expensive luxury item that is really just a status symbol for most people, who, especially in Vancouver where we live, nobody here needs fur to keep warm.
No, and the trouble is that people perhaps will come to Canada and be told you need a warm coat, and Canada Goose is a popular brand, and they will buy, thinking that they're just buying a popular warm coat. They won't even think of it as a status symbol.
Yeah,
it's become that common. This is the problem that we're fighting against, is that it's become so common. It's on the TV shows. It's on film sets. It's really tough at the moment for people.
I see a lot of news people wearing them when they're doing their broadcasts.
Right, and I think it's really important. Twitter is some way that you can get through to people. You can find, you know, all reporters are now have their Twitter handle. So what I do and what a lot of people are doing now is, you know, kind of building pressure campaigns where you see someone wearing fur and you just send them a message. It doesn't need to be too aggressive. You can just say how sad you are that they're wearing animal violence.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I will do that. Thank you.
Yeah, cool.
Now let's talk about why I'm having you on the show today, because you recently took your activism to the next level, which has landed you in some hot water with the police. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, it's called Open Rescue, and you would think that going into a pig breeding facility and bringing out sick and injured animals and saving small, cute piglets from a life of absolute torture would be something that would be applauded, but no. We're now DXE activists, direct action everywhere activists, are now being targeted across the world, it seems, by the authorities. And I mean, we know that going into private premises is an act of civil disobedience. What we don't expect is to be treated the way I was, where, you know, we have 10 officers coming banging on the house in the dark of the morning. Yeah, I didn't expect that at all.
That's frightening.
So
they put handcuffs on you, right? They put you in the police car?
Yeah, I was going to start filming because I like to get evidence of, you know, anything that happens. And I got my phone out ready to record. It's 6 a.m. You know, I had just been woken up from the back of the house, you know, with flashlights and banging. Open the door and I start to record, but then they grab me and I have to throw my phone back into the house because I didn't want them to get my phone when it was unlocked. And they put me in handcuffs. Yeah, it was really quite traumatic.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk a little bit more about you entering this pig breeding facility? What did you see?
Just to finish that little story off, that they had a search warrant.
Okay.
And they came into the house, and about 10 police officers then kind of went through the whole house, taking out computers, cameras, and paperwork too.
That's intimidating for sure. A real violation. Mm-hmm.
So you asked what did I see when I went inside?
Yeah, let's talk about you entering this pig breeding facility, how this idea came about for you and how you selected it and what you saw.
Well, you know, a few years back we were wanting to kind of confirm all the different videos that we'd started to see online, whether they be from other countries or even Mercy for Animals, we're having some Canadian footage. And we basically wanted to start looking for that ourselves and seeing whether we could find and confirm that that was actually still happening in the Canadian countryside. So it's all teamwork. I mean, teamwork is everything, even though I'm the current face of these charges. So we started looking for these pristine white sheds in the countryside, and funnily enough, what you find inside is an absolute horror story. So I think pretty much I can say that if you go inside any big white shed in the countryside, you'll find an absolute horror story. You'll find sick, injured, dying animals of whatever, you know, whether it be chickens in the meat industry or pigs in pig breeding facilities or pig fattening facilities. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The industry is hiding some terrible, dark secrets.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to a friend today about what they would see if they watched the video that you created that day, and they just didn't believe me. I mean, I don't know if it was because they thought in Canada we would have better laws or that nowhere in the world would this be happening to animals. And I had to say, we have some of the worst animal welfare laws in the world here.
We do. And if you listen to an organization like Animal Justice, who are young animal rights lawyers, then you will find that that is true. And especially for animals inside farms, there are regulations for animals in transport, although they are not at all followed, sadly. But I think animals inside farms almost have it the worst. Because what you see, what industry will claim is that you will find statements like gestation crates and firing crates will not be allowed in Canada. And then you read the fine print, and then you find that that's in new build. So they forget to mention that the existing facilities, they're allowed to continue whatever disgusting practices they have historically allowed. So I find inside, when I go, huge rooms full of mother pigs who can't turn around, with rats running around, with their waste going down into a big pit, with no enrichment. And, you know, as I go inside, I find that my eyes start streaming, my nose does, my lungs start clogging up with all the ammonia in the air and all the particles in the air. This is what you can't see on the video. And it's really difficult to describe. I've got more video that I haven't released from this facility. And I wish I'd recorded more, because I go into a small room and there's the male pigs, full of hormones, big boars, confined in very similar crates. They can't turn around themselves. They have no enrichment. They just have nothing. It's just hard to describe and hard to fathom how people can work in these terrible places and justify what they do for a living. It's really hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, that brings me to my next question. So you and I, as full-time animal rights activists, we know that often when we're doing activism, if we get some cantankerous types, they'll say things like, why don't you focus on human issues? And so let's talk about the workers. I don't imagine that you saw any workers that day, but you do know what they go through in these types of jobs. Did you see any workers there?
No, but on one occasion, we kind of had a close call with some workers. We were kind of really close to being discovered one day. They started work at 5 a.m. And when people say that we're not concerned about humans, I mean, I feel so bad for people working in that facility. When you go to the firing crates and you see the mother pigs, there's dead piglets everywhere. What, dead and dying piglets? And there's afterbirth everywhere. Mm-hmm. And these people have to clean it up. It's like, how can you work in that situation? I mean, personally as well, I donate to human charities. I donate to CAMH. I've always been someone who's concerned about the mental health and people suffering human suffering that goes on in the world. I donate to UNICEF. You know, I give small monthly donations to these organizations. And funnily enough, like last night, a group of activists from Toronto brought care packages to the homeless in the streets. And apparently in London, they served 300 people a big vegan meal in a church setting. So, I mean, all over, vegan organizations and activists are caring about humans and trying to help.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, even I never get much time with these people that make these comments to me when I'm doing outreach, but I could go on and on about the human issues that are connected to animal issues. And number one right now that I think we all need to be concerned about is the environment.
Right.
From farming. And a lot of people aren't thinking about this right now. Do you go into those discussions?
Absolutely. Now, interestingly enough, there was an environmentalist that Anita Crines was talking to. I'll give you his name afterwards, perhaps. But he knows all the impacts of the environment and of animal agriculture. And they're so disturbing. They are just... Animal agriculture is polluting the water, polluting the air, polluting the sea. The methane and the carbon dioxide from meat production, animal production, is taking over the atmosphere. But at the same time, interestingly, this environmentalist, he's been on the IPCC. He's a top-notch guy, and he was saying, you know what, as I look more into the animals and what they're enduring, he feels it's more of a priority to start talking about what animals are going through, because as he feels that the environmental impacts are almost long-term, whereas animals are suffering right now. I was so taken by what he was saying, but even he feels that, yes, we really need to be concerned about the environment, but should we be taking that as a priority over what animals are going through and killing animals for food? Should we be doing that? It's a tough question.
Well, I mean, I resent being even put in a position where I have to always be strategizing which angle to take with people, because stating one reason to go vegan just isn't enough for them. And you can show people a video of animal cruelty and they'll go, I need more evidence. I need more reasons. And there's some people,
right,
you'll give them every reason and every angle and they're still not convinced. And I just find it incredibly high maintenance. And it gives me a lot of dystopia, and I just kind of have a breakdown sometimes from it all. I don't know how to reach some people, and I never treated vegans in the way that a lot of people are toward us. And so I don't know how to approach them because I'm not like them.
Well, you know, I think one thing is to not get too tied into people like that. I do outreach with Anonymous for the Voiceless, and you can sometimes see that someone will not be reached. It's not time for them.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it takes 6 or 7 occurrences before, or even more, before someone will kind of see the light and realize their actions are causing animals in distress and causing environmental degradation and targeting their own health too. So I think the thing to do to just save yourself a little bit and save your own mental health is to walk away sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I will literally put my hand up and say, I'm done. And I will walk away. Yeah, I just won't allow myself to be brought down too much by people like that.
Interesting.
Just move on to the next person. There's plenty of people that we can be reaching.
Right. That's interesting. Thank you. And, you know, I do, again, I learn so much from watching your videos. You are absolutely tireless.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't post every video that I take, and sometimes, you know, it will seem as though I'm calm in every situation, but sometimes, no, I let rip, and I will tell someone exactly what I think and what I think they're doing and how cold-hearted they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does get to you sometimes. It's tough being an activist, and especially perhaps, you know, this is the season now where we're seeing fur on the streets too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of in our faces. Yeah, it's tough being an activist sometimes, but you know what? Doing something about it, I find it gives me hope.
Mm-hmm.
And just today, funnily enough, I was at a cow vigil, and I met a new activist. She'd started, you know, she's just 3 months into activism. And that's what gives me hope, going out on the streets, meeting other people,
mm-hmm.
meeting people who are newbie activists, and seeing their passion, seeing their fire.
I agree. Our group in Vancouver has grown lately, and it's wonderful to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your self-care like?
I'm not active all the time. I will sit in front of the telly. I do have Netflix. Watching a good series on Netflix is helpful. And, you know, doing Sudoku and just sitting quietly in nature helps. There's a whole ream of things, really, that don't cost any money at all. Just taking a walk in the neighborhood and, you know what? Take some leaflets with you, though.
I never leave home without them.
Right. Because even when you're doing your self-care, when perhaps, you know, you're going out for a walk, you can come across someone, and it doesn't have to end in a shouting match. You can end in a really good conversation about veganism or about what they're wearing. Mm-hmm. The fur that they're wearing.
I every time I leave the house with anti-fur leaflets in my pocket, I come home empty-handed. I hate to say that, but yeah.
Good for you.
I mean, I don't mean that in a good way. I mean, I can't believe I'm seeing so many people in coats. I've run out within an hour of being out somewhere. It just drives me crazy. But yes, never leave home without the leaflets. And anyone who's listening who wants leaflets, you can order them for free from PETA, which is awesome.
Yeah, and I had someone donate 10,000 leaflets to me. There's a few boxes left, so I kind of struggle a little bit with, you know, putting packages together and sending them out, but I do commit to doing that, and, okay. Spreading the word.
Great.
Because it's nice to be able to have a leaflet that talks a little bit about veganism, too, and speciesism, and also has information about all the different fur-bearing animals that people might be wearing.
Mm-hmm. And now back to you in the cop car that morning that they came over and handcuffed you. Did you try to veganize the police while you were sitting in there?
I certainly did.
Of course.
Of course. Like any situation. And I found it a little tough because they were kind of trying to have me admit to things that I was saying no comment on, but at the same time I was trying to get them to see that you know what, you do not need to be consuming animal flesh. I mean, why are we still killing animals? But yeah, I mean, sometimes the police are a little tough to communicate with, but you have to try, don't you?
Oh, I always try.
Yeah, even when you're in handcuffs and in the back of a police car, you have to try.
That's awesome. I love it. Now, let's go back to, you know, when you went into this pig production facility, did you know you'd be facing criminal charges and a police raid of your home? What were you thinking was going to happen?
You do. Direct Action Everywhere, we have training for activists, and historically, criminal charges were not happening. We always knew that that was a possibility. And I'm lucky in a way. I'm able to put myself forward and have my face uncovered and do open rescue and know that criminal charges might be coming my way.
Mm-hmm.
But we feel it's more important to provide that window to other people about what is happening in animal agriculture. You know, it's a really powerful statement to the opposition, to farmers. It's difficult to even call them farmers these days when you see inside and you know what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, when you're able to go in and save individuals and tell their stories, we feel that that's worth the risk of having criminal charges. But, you know, to be honest, I really didn't expect the police to do it the way they did, to come in, you know, in the dark and raid my house with a search warrant.
Yeah, I know it's something that I would expect down in the U.S. with what's going on with the ag gag laws, but I did not expect that kind of unnecessary shock to you at such an early hour. It's you'd right. think that you'd done something much worse to be getting that.
Yeah. But, you know, in a way, I feel as though I need to reassure people who do activism on the street, that will not happen to you. Giving someone a leaflet and talking to someone on the street or doing a demonstration on the street on public property is not something to be afraid of being targeted by the police. Open rescue is something where we do know that we are undertaking civil disobedience, and we do expect potential repercussions from that. But I don't think it should put anyone off being active for animals.
Mm-hmm. So you have no regrets over what you did?
None at all.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I look at this whole thing as an opportunity. When a trial starts up, we have good lawyers, animal rights lawyers. They're vegan too. What we hope is that this will have a huge impact on the public. Already, the Toronto Star has had 3 different articles about this case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, two great ones. One comparing me to a terrorist, a German gang that went and killed people. So it's going to be an interesting ride to see how the public responds to this and what happens as a result of this trial. Yeah.
I'm really grateful for people like you and Anita, because it's got to be a scary process, but you are able to put the meat industry on trial when it happens. And people who normally don't follow these kinds of news stories, who wouldn't see the video that you posted on YouTube, for example, or Facebook, are now going to be seeing it. And, you know, like the person I was speaking with today, he did not believe the kinds of things that I described that you showed in your video. And I'm looking forward to sending it to him, actually, to see if it inspires him to go vegan.
Right. And the fact that I can say I was in there, this is my face,
mm-hmm.
This is exactly what you see,
mm-hmm.
is real, and it's in Canada, it's, you know, not far from where you live, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
So I feel it's really important, and it's a really worthwhile undertaking.
So when is your court date?
Well, there's been a court date which the lawyer went to, and then there's another one next week that the lawyer will go to, and then I will need to appear probably, I would think, early 2019.
Yeah.
So when that happens, then we'll be posting on social media, and we'll be making an event. And, you know, it needs to be said, teamwork. You know, people have been so supportive. People have been sharing the petition. I do have a legal fundraiser, which people have been very kind donating to.
Mm-hmm.
I must admit, I do say that if you can afford to donate to the legal fundraiser, maybe, you know, instead of donating the whole amount, donate some money to your favorite sanctuary. Animal sanctuaries, farm animal sanctuaries are so important.
Absolutely. Great. Well, where can people find how to donate to you if they're just listening now? And I'll also post it on our Facebook page.
Yeah. It's Direct Action Everywhere.
Okay.
And then there's a link. There's an Open Rescue video.
Mm-hmm.
I'll send you the video.
Okay.
And the links to the fundraiser and to the petition.
Okay.
And then, yeah. I mean, I post them on my own page, and we post them on Direct Action Everywhere, Toronto page.
Okay.
But as Facebook does, you know, these things kind of fall down the page as we do other activism.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'll send you the link.
Right. Okay, so and our Facebook page for everyone listening is Animal Voices Vancouver. And Jenny, do you have a call to action for our listeners today, whether they be vegan or non-vegan?
Yeah, I would say just become active. Speak up for whatever cause that moves you the most. I find that people doing all sorts of activism is very inspiring. And if there's an issue that concerns you, then become active.
Right.
That's the thing, build community and become active.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Jenny. I wish you all the best. And, of course, we'll be following you very closely and to see how you do with this trial. And I really just can't thank you enough for taking on this. It's a risk and it's scary, and thank you. We need someone to do it.
Awesome. And thank you for having me on the show.
Okay.
It's tremendous what you're doing.
Thank you.
Promoting different animal causes and getting awareness out there. So thank you so much.
I'm so happy to know you. Take care, my dear friend.
And you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
That was animal rights activist Jenny McQueen talking about being charged for break and enter and mischief for going into a pig production facility and exposing the cruelty within. And now for some news. California has moved one step closer to banning the sale and manufacture of fur products throughout the state. Assemblymember Democrat Laura Friedman introduced the state fur ban bill that would make California the first to implement such a measure. The move follows similar decisions made across several of its cities. In September, the Los Angeles City Council voted unanimously to ban the sale of fur within city limits, 6 months later after San Francisco passed a similar ban. Laura Friedman said, "California is one of the most progressive states in the country and a world leader in animal welfare. Given the overwhelming evidence of inhumane practices in the fur industry and the availability of so many different options for warm and fashionable fabrics, we will not continue to be complicit in unnecessary cruelty towards animals solely for the sake of fur." The bill, which is sponsored by Animal Hope in Legislation and the Animal Hope and Wellness Foundation and the Humane Society, would make it illegal to manufacture, sell, trade, and donate fur products within the state, with the exception of used fur, across clothing, handbags, shoes, slippers, hats, and accessories. A California fur ban would be in keeping with the tidal wave of support for a growing anti-fur movement across the fashion industry and the world. Multiple fashion houses have recently made public their plans to discontinue the use of fur, including Chanel, Coach, Diane von Furstenberg, Burberry, and Versace. Earlier this year, Norway became the latest country to propose a ban on fur farming, while September's London Fashion Week was an entirely fur-free event. Vancouver eatery Dundas Eat and Drink debuted the Vegan Bun Bow Hue Challenge for the month of December. The challenge pits diners against a 3-pound bowl of pho, a spicy soup made with tofu, thinly sliced vegan meat, noodles, and a sour and mildly spicy broth, and gives them 20 minutes to consume it. The fastest 5 customers to finish the dish, including the broth, in the allotted time will win a $100 gift card to the restaurant and compete against one another for a $500 grand prize.
And you have to see the size of that pho to actually realize how big it is.
Yeah.
Did you see the picture? It's enormous.
Yeah.
And it's $25 to purchase.
Some people really like these eating contests. So
I know, I mean, some people who would win them.
Okay. I can imagine who that would be. This week, Los Angeles City Councilman Paul Koretz proposed a citywide mandate to require every entertainment venue, such as movie theaters, sports arenas, to offer at least one vegan protein option. Koretz held a press conference attended by representatives from animal rights group People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, the Humane League, and the LA Food Policy Council to discuss the proposed measure. "There's really no downside to it," Koretz told Variety. "The change could easily be made in any venue. A movie theater serves hot dogs. They can serve vegan hot dogs. It's easy. While Los Angeles theaters and sports arenas offer some vegan options, such as popcorn, the measure would require more substantial dishes. We'd like to see vegan nachos, vegan hot dogs, a typical cinema fare with a compassionate twist," PETA Senior International Media Director Ben Williamson said. "If you're going to pay $12 for a box of popcorn, you don't want any animal to have to suffer for it." This week, United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit became the first federal appellate court to strike down provisions of an ag gag law, ruling that Idaho's ban on recording conditions at factory farms and slaughterhouses violated free speech rights. Idaho initially passed legislation in 2014 that banned filming practices at animal agriculture operations after animal rights organization Mercy for Animals released footage of rampant animal cruelty at Idaho's Betancourt Dairy. And the state's $2.5 billion dairy industry complained that the videos unfairly hurt their businesses. Drafted by the Idaho Dairymen's Association, the law would have criminalized investigative public interest journalism. A lawsuit has been filed the same year by a coalition of public interest groups and journalists led by the Animal Legal Defense Fund, and it has been an ongoing court battle since then. Idaho is singling out for the suppression of one mode of speech, audio and video recordings of agricultural operations, to keep controversy and suspect practices out of the public eye, the court ruled. Idaho has been ordered to pay $260,000 to the ADLF and others involved in the case. an employment hearing between animal welfare organization League Against Cruel Sports and former employee Jordi Casamagena will be the first case in Britain to decide if ethical veganism is a philosophical belief that should be afforded the same discrimination protections as religion. Jordi, a longtime vegan, alleges that he was fired for gross misconduct after he discovered and informed his colleagues that their employee pension fund was invested in companies involved in animal testing, despite being told by management not to communicate with staff about it. The employee is moving forward with an employment tribunal hearing, which has been set for the spring. The hearing will determine whether ethical veganism can be protected by the country's discrimination legislation, and a subsequent hearing will decide if Jordi was discriminated against. And Allison, you work in the Canadian military. I'm often wondering how that affects you and your veganism. And you have a uniform which is partially wool and leather boots, and mm-hmm. you have to go on trips with the band, and they feed you. So
The food's getting better, I'll have to say that. Mm-hmm. I'm actually have been quite thankful the last few meals that have been catered for us. I've got one coming up this weekend that I'm looking forward to because I was told, yep, we got a vegan meal for you. That's all I care about. Mm-hmm. And the food has actually been really good lately. But yeah, I joined the military when I was not vegan, so I did not have the awareness of what it means to wear animal products. And now, you know, 20 years in, it's a commitment for me, but I wish there was some way that I could not have to defy my vegan values by wearing these animal products. So I mean, some of our uniform pieces are not made out of animal parts, which is nice, but yeah, there are the boots, the leather boots. And we have found out recently, though, in the last few months, that soldiers are now allowed to buy their own boots, so I'm going to be shopping for some vegan boots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you and I were also talking about the Ceremonial Guard.
Band of the Ceremonial Guard in Ottawa on Parliament Hill, they wear complete bear furs on their heads, just like they do at Buckingham Palace.
Ridiculous.
Very traditional.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's something that we have little fur hats too, but they're fake.
Oh,
they're
okay.
Fake. I mean, you can do that. You mm-hmm. can have fake fur.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were talking about early in the show, fur is, I'm hoping it's going to be really considered to be just really not cool or ethical for anyone to wear.
Mm-hmm.
Not so far yet in Vancouver, but I think that day is coming, especially with your announcement of the almost statewide ban of fur in California.
Right. Okay, moving on to some animal rights events taking place this weekend. Tomorrow, December the 8th, meet in the square next to the giant Christmas tree at UBC Robson Square downtown. Dress warm and wear gloves. The Cube of Truth is a peaceful static demonstration akin to an art performance. This demonstration operates in a structured manner that triggers curiosity and interest from the public as we attempt to lead bystanders to a vegan conclusion through a combination of local standard practice, animal exploitation footage shown on TV screens, and conversations with value-based sales approach. And here's a fun one, the Vegan Night Market at the Waldorf, Thursday, December the 13th from 6 to 10. A fun-filled evening amongst Vancouver's most exclusive vegan cooks, artisans, artists, social influencers, and much more. I'm definitely going to this. How about you, Allison?
I would normally say no because I'm embracing a zero-waste lifestyle, but my sister's going to be here that night, and I know she would love it.
I didn't know that.
So we should go together.
And bring some Tupperware and cutlery. You can still do it zero-waste.
Well, I'm on a no-spending lifestyle.
Oh, well.
So, but yeah.
Maybe
so
people will feed you for free because you're a hero.
Well, I will just go to look and to see.
Okay. I'll buy you some things. Anyway, the admission is just $2.
Or I'm going to donate a coat.
Or,
you can
or
donate
donations.
A coat.
Yes, use jackets and things like that. Okay. One more event if we have time. Looking to go plant-based in the new year? Learn how veganism or even just reducing your consumption of animal products can benefit your health from a registered dietitian. This talk will give you a crash course in plant-based nutrition and is a great opportunity for the veg curious to understand the benefits of going plant-based, while current vegetarians or vegans will be excited to speak with a dietitian that understands animal ethics. Desiree Nielsen is a registered dietitian based in Vancouver. She runs a nutrition consulting practice with a focus on inflammation, digestion, and plant-centered diets. So if you have anyone that you're trying to veganize, I would love it if you could consider bringing them here, because often these events are full of people who are already converted, and there's such a great opportunity to convert new people and to answer all of those yeah-but questions, protein, iron,
And we had Desiree answer some of those questions on our show a few weeks ago when she was here, and she's amazing.
Awesome.
So look up that show on animalvoices.org if you want to see more about what her style is. She's super knowledgeable.
That's good. And it's not easy to find a vegan dietitian. It's easier to find a vegan nutritionist, but this is great. So anyway, that will take place Thursday, January 10th from 7 to 9 at 350 West Georgia. All the events that I announce will always be on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. Do we have time for one more, Allison?
Sure.
Okay. This is a good one. Speaking of people who've been on our show before, join Chef Karen McCarthy, founder of Blue Heron Cheese and author of The Art of Plant-Based Cheesemaking, in learning how to make cultured fresh vegan cheese. This four-class course, held over 4 days, focuses on getting students to make their own vegan cheeses from growing cultures to easy aging techniques. The course is homework driven with a lecture demo component. Students are asked to bring their assignments back for review, discussion, and comparison, and they're asked to bring a notebook. Key starter cultures are included in the course price, and a Blue Heron cheese tasting concludes the last day of the course. Each course day, Karen will provide a cheesy snack, a fun way to highlight different ways vegan cheeses can be used. Tickets are $200 for the series of 4 sessions, and you can find out more on our Facebook page, but just to give you the dates, it's January 21st to February 11th. So Animal Voices Vancouver on Facebook.
Yeah, I highly recommend this course as well. I've taken it and I learned so much. Karen is a star when it comes to knowing all about how bacteria work and ferment. And I made some of her cheeses too. They were so delicious. I highly recommend it. And check out her new restaurant called Soil that just opened on Main and 8th. So you have been listening to Animal Voices here on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Please join us on next week's show, Friday, December the 14th. The holidays are coming, and with that usually comes a lot of buying, a lot of consumerism, a lot of waste, and I want to learn how we can celebrate a zero waste celebration for the holidays, and we'll be having someone who can give us some great tips on that on the show. It's Tasha Lobsinger from the Peace People Project. She will be she'll be telling us more about her zero waste lifestyle and how it intersects with veganism, and giving many tips and lots of advice on how to celebrate a zero waste holiday this year. Also, my sister Leanna Picard will be in town, and she'll be giving us an update on her recent animal activism in South Dakota. So we want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can go to listen to our podcasts and download them. We're also downloadable on iTunes. Send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com if you want to suggest anything to us. We answer emails too. You can also go onto our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. We have a lot of info that we always post on there. So we'll be ending today's show with a song. Did you want to announce a song, Jen?
It's called Gold by Chet Faker.
So stay tuned for an incredible environmental program, Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals.
I said it, you gotta know, I'm feeling love. You gotta know, I'm feeling love. You gotta know, I'm feeling love. Made it gold, I'll never love her. Another one, another you, it's gotta be love. I said it,
might as well be in our garden. I said I smell in the air is a dripping rose.
You can be the one for me.
Another soul to be my warden of anything there that's made of gold. Your eyes to see what it's done.
begun.